I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. After saying that his position on gay marriage was evolving, President Obama announced last night that he supported marriage equality. Here's what he told ABC TV.
But I have to tell you that over the course of several years, as I talk to friends and family and neighbors, when I think about members of my own staff who are incredibly committed monogamous relationships, same-sex relationships, who are raising kids together. When I think about those soldiers or airmen or Marines or sailors who are out there fighting on my behalf and yet feel constrained, even now that Don't Ask, Don't Tell is gone, because they're not able to commit themselves in a marriage. At a certain point, I've just concluded that for me personally, it is important for me to go ahead and affirm that I think same-sex couples should be able to get married.
This groundbreaking announcement came after both Vice President Joe Biden and Education Secretary Arne Duncan said this week that they supported gay marriage. But the first member of the Obama administration to voice support for marriage equality is our guest, Sean Donovan. He's Secretary of the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD, and with millions of homeowners underwater or struggling, his office is responsible for addressing the housing crisis so important to the U.S. economy. We will talk about all of this, but first, let me welcome Secretary Donovan to Radio Times. Nice to have you with us on the show.
Marty, it's great to be here.
Let me begin with the president's announcement last night, talking about his support, his evolution, and his support of marriage equality. What's the significance of that announcement?
Well, Marty, there's no question that this is a historic landmark, the first president to ever publicly support marriage equality. And, you know, like my own statements, this is really a deeply felt personal conviction that the president has grappled with and obviously made public yesterday. What I would say, though, is that as important as this is going to be to so many millions of Americans, to children growing up grappling with their own identities, it is also a personal conviction. And I think what I hope this will do, in addition to the landmark that it is, deservedly so, will focus attention back on the record of this administration. The president's words yesterday don't hold any specific force of law. He did say that states have the right and should continue to make their own decisions about this. What we should focus back on, I think, as well, is the remarkable record that this administration has in actually making a difference in the day-to-day lives of the LGBT community. If you think about Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the hate crimes legislation that's been passed, the ability of partners to visit in hospitals. If you think about just on the housing front, the landmark work that we've done today because of a rule that HUD published earlier this year, families now include couples of the same sex, and they are protected when they go to try to live in public housing. They are protected when they try to get a mortgage from FHA, which accounted for about a third of all home purchases in the country last year. And that record is, I think, the most remarkable of any administration in the history of this country. And all of that was accomplished before yesterday.
Do you think you influenced him in any way by coming out as you did last fall?
You know, what I would really say about that, Marty, is what I have seen every day with this president, whether you go back to his speech on race here in Philadelphia that he made during the campaign and so many other areas, that he takes his decision-making, his personal feelings about the most fundamental moral issues in our country and grapples with them, leaves aside the politics. As he said himself, talked for many, many hours with Michelle, the First Lady, with his children about this, with staff members. What I would say is this is something that was a deeply felt, and if I contributed in any way, that may be part of it. I don't know. What I would say is this is clearly part of a broader evolution that he has struggled with, and he's made that clear.
Do you think there are, though, political risks in his announcement? For him, obviously, in a re-election year with what seems like a very partisan, divided country.
Look, what I can tell you is this was not a political decision. It was a deeply felt personal decision. And I think it's – I'm not the politics guy. I don't do politics. And I certainly would guess that there are as many political risks, if not more, than there are political benefits. He did this because he thought this was the right thing. What I will also say is, look, he and the First Lady are both practicing Christians. And they understand, and this is one of the reasons he took this decision so seriously, and he grappled with it over such a period of time, that the traditions of so many people of faith in this country are important to him and his own traditions. And he understands that there are many people in this country who will disagree with him in a principled way about this. And so that has clearly been part of his struggle as well, is with his own traditions and his own faith.
Did you struggle with your own traditions and faith when you came out on this issue?
Look, this is something for me, and I think I see this in my own children. I have young children who have friends growing up with gay or lesbian parents. I've seen very personally their commitment, their passion about raising their children, and particularly growing up in New York City, have seen such a tradition there of a strong commitment to equality that I think from an early age for me, this was something that was just part of a culture, not only a religious tradition, but a culture that I understood of equality that was part of me in a way that may be different for other people or other parts of the country as well.
Well, talking about, I guess, words and deeds, interestingly, earlier this year, HUD, your organization, broke ground on housing here, public housing in Philadelphia for LGBT residents.
Well, one of the things that we have seen, and one of the things I'm proudest of that has been pathbreaking in the work that we've done at HUD, is a landmark study that we've done of housing discrimination against LGBT people. And we've clearly found, and this is one of the reasons that led to this project you described, which is pathbreaking, the first of its kind in the country, that serves LGBT seniors, that there really has been a limited set of options for couples. And perhaps the most heartbreaking part of this is that when you look at homeless youth, recent studies show that about 40% of homeless youth are LGBT, and a huge part of the reason why they end up on the streets is whether it's fights with their own family about their identity or discrimination. We found very high levels of discrimination in homeless shelters, as an example. And so one of the things that we're very focused on, and this is really the most extreme example of it, is making sure that there are a full set of options available to the LGBT community in housing.
Including some of these young people that are homeless?
Absolutely. We recently, the White House recently sponsored a conference in Detroit on homelessness and housing for the LGBT community. And this was a big part of the focus is on homeless youth.
Let's talk broadly about the housing crisis. How many homeowners today are underwater?
Well, about 20% of homeowners that have mortgages across the country are underwater. In Pennsylvania, we're talking about around 150,000 families. Pennsylvania doesn't have as big a challenge in this area as some states like Florida,
Nevada.
Arizona, Nevada. But it is just under 10% of Pennsylvania homeowners that are underwater. What I will say is what you have to recognize is this was a problem that the president inherited, that I inherited on the day we walked into office. Home prices have been dropping around the country for 30 straight months. So in fact, if you look at what's happened to that negative equity since in the last 3 years, really about the same number of families are underwater. We've been able to stabilize the market. And what I think is encouraging is that really through this winter, I think the housing market has turned a corner. Just here in the Philadelphia region, CoreLogic just put out their numbers. For the first time, you have a year-over-year increase in housing prices. It's small, 0.7%. If you take out distressed sales, it's actually closer to 2% year-over-year increase. So we really are starting to see, I think, a turning point in the housing market. What we have to do, though, many of the policies that we put out have made a real difference. We have to accelerate that progress, just like we have to do on the jobs front and the economy more broadly.
But should we rethink home ownership and even, you know, the American dream? We often think of the American dream is owning a home. But as we learn from the mortgage crisis, there were people who were getting mortgages who had no jobs, they had no assets, no income. I mean, they literally could not be a homeowner because they didn't have the requisite skills to do what a homeowner has to do. Do we need to rethink that?
What I would say is that we have to go back to the basics in some way with home ownership. We have to get away from thinking of homes as a quick buck. Many people were using their homes almost like ATM machines. Right. And there's plenty of blame to go around. This wasn't just a question of families deciding to take too big loans. This was a much broader failure, a regulatory failure, a failure in our financial system. And one of the things the president has worked hardest at, with much resistance, was to pass the most sweeping financial reforms that this country has seen since the Depression with the Dodd-Frank Act. We're working very closely with the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which the president stepped up and did a recess appointment for Richard Cordray in order to make sure that we could move forward with those protections of families. But what I would say about home ownership, the best evidence I've seen is that home ownership really can be a good thing for families. Children do better in school with a stable place to live. Home ownership tends to be more stable. And so I think we shouldn't pull up the drawbridge, if you will, particularly to first-time home buyers, African-Americans, Latinos, to be able to become homeowners. But we need to make sure, first, that there are safe, sustainable mortgage products that they can access. And second, to make sure that there are options, that we have a balanced national housing policy. I think one of the problems we ran into is that our housing policy for too long was really only about home ownership. And what we've tried to do in the Obama administration is get back to a balanced housing policy where we support home ownership in the right way, but also support rental housing in critical ways as well, particularly recognizing that our lowest income families are going to find it harder to save for a down payment and to get access to home ownership.
Well, we're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation talking about home ownership and the housing crisis. And our guest is Sean Donovan. He is the Secretary of the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD. He's had this job since President Obama was essentially sworn into office. And as we know, the housing crisis, the mortgage crisis, very much a part of what led to the recession. The country slowly getting its act together, but nonetheless, some challenges remain. We're going to take a very short break, talk some more, and also open up the lines at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
The Chester County Hospital supports WHYY and is affiliated with the Cleveland Clinic's Heart Surgical Program. Their surgeons are performing breakthrough procedures, including minimally invasive heart valve surgeries. Details at chestercountyhospital.org.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY, A Tale of Madness and Murder, of Rebellion and Revenge. Chief Conductor Charles Dutoit leads the Philadelphia Orchestra in opera in concert at the Kimmel Center. Richard Strauss's Elektra. Ava Johansson sings Elektra, a role for which she has received wide recognition. Tickets at 215-893-1999 or online. This Thursday and Saturday at the Kimmel Center, Charles Dutoit conducts Richard Strauss's Elektra.
I'm Marty Moscowain.
I'm Terry Gross.
And I'm Dave Davies. Help WHYY celebrate 25 years of Radio Times and Fresh Air at a special live event.
Dave will ask the questions. Marty and I will have to answer them at the Suzanne Roberts Theater in Philadelphia.
It all happens Monday, June 4th at 7, and you can reserve your tickets at whyy.org/member experience.
Celebrate 25 years of public media's best, Radio Times and Fresh Air.
Programming is supported by 21st Century Cyber Charter School, providing public online education for grades 6 through 12, utilizing the latest information and communication technology. More information at 21stcenturycyber.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. And if you're just joining us, I'm talking with Sean Donovan today in this hour of Radio Times, Secretary of the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD. And we have just one or two open lines at 1-888-477-9499. Let me just pick up on what you were saying before the break about having a balanced approach to housing. We did a show not so long ago about rentals and renters and feeling that somehow they are disadvantaged by our economy. They don't get some of the tax breaks that a homeowner does. They also, as a renter, have a little more flexibility to go where the jobs might be. A home, especially one that's underwater, kind of ties you to a particular neighborhood. Should we rethink renting and renters?
There's no question that rental housing needs to be a critical part of our national housing policy. And there's something I'm very proud of in terms of the work that we've done. This president, this White House, has for the first time ever convened a rental housing policy working group across the entire administration to look at ways that we can accelerate construction. And in fact, if you look at the brightest spot in our housing market over the past few years, it's been that the rental market has really come back very strong. We've had a great deal of construction, growing construction, many construction workers being put back to work because construction was so hard hit in the crisis in the few years before the president came into office. That's been a real bright spot. What I would also say, though, is you hit on a very important point, Marty, which is about mobility. One of the hallmarks of the American economy has always been that our workers are very mobile. And so we have a flexible economy that helps families move to where the jobs are. Our home ownership system has been part of that. And so one of the areas where the president has been very focused, and you've seen many areas where we've really aggressively gone after this housing challenge over the last year and the last 3 years, is that we are trying to really make sure that we accelerate the rebuilding of equity so that families can get back above water and be able to move to jobs where they are.
Well, that's a perfect segue to an agreement that came out in February. The nation's top mortgage lenders signed a $26 billion agreement settling a number of issues. What will that mean? What does that mean to an individual homeowner? Let's say a homeowner that is underwater.
Well, we've had many areas where we've really reached many families that are still struggling. Just to give you one example, 6 million families across the country have had their mortgages modified. It's one of the big reasons that we've seen the number of families falling into foreclosure nationally cut by about half since when the president came into office. But if there's one tool that has been hardest to achieve, it's been actual principal reduction. In other words, not just lowering payments for families, but reducing the balances on their loans. And what was one of the things that was so important about this settlement, and I fought personally very hard.
The number of Tim Geithner, I read.
Actually not. With the banks, they were resisting very strongly. Many 10-hour meetings, full-day meetings in my conference room, pushing the banks to do it. And they finally accepted real principal reduction. And what that will mean is about 1 million families across the country will actually see the balances on their loans permanently reduced. Here in Pennsylvania, we would expect that it's about $250 million of benefits to homeowners. Over 20,000 families we expect to see those benefits. And it started already. We actually have principal reductions that have begun to happen in states around the country. All of these five banks are now mailing letters to homeowners to encourage them to come in and talk to them about these principal reductions. So I would tell any listeners that may be in this situation to look out for that. There's a website, nationalmortgagesettlement.com, that they can go to see if they may be eligible. And also the other thing is there is, for any family that's struggling, you should know that there are many scam artists out there trying to take advantage of you. There is free counseling from HUD available in every community. go to, call the HOPE hotline at 888-995-HOPE to be able to get access to those services.
Just a couple of questions here. If someone gets one of those letters, they go into their bank, do they have to pay fees, or does this happen automatically?
I wouldn't say it happens automatically. You can't just read the letter and expect it. You have to reach out, call your servicer, and talk to them about it, but you won't be charged fees for this.
I also read that for those people that had actually lost a home over the last 3 years through foreclosure, that they get $2,000. That seems pretty stingy for someone that lost a house.
I'm glad you asked about this, because this is something that is widely misunderstood about the settlement. There are actually two different ways that a family can be helped. In the settlement, what we found in our investigations, and we were investigating for a number of years the egregious practices that led to this settlement. The robo-signing, but not just robo-signing. It was much broader than that in terms of the way these loans were serviced. What we found is that in most cases, the harm that was done to a family is their paperwork was lost and it delayed them getting help a month, or they were charged fees that they shouldn't have. So for most families, it makes sense that they not go through an extended process of reviewing their situation. They can come in quickly and get a $1,500 or $2,000 payment that compensates them for the harm that was done to them. But if there was a family who's lost their home to foreclosure that never should have, that where a robo-signing or something like led to that, they can actually go in a separate process that none of the $26 billion in the settlement would be used for this. They can go and have their case reviewed, look at all the history, and get compensated at the bank's expense for the full amount that they were harmed. And so that is available until the end of July, and it's something that we want to make sure that homeowners, where you think you've lost your home and you shouldn't have, that this help is available.
Will there be a criminal probe, especially looking at things like robo-signings, taking away people's houses? Yeah. Will people be held criminally responsible?
This is something that's very important because, again, one of the misperceptions is that somehow this settlement solved all of the problems of the mortgage crisis. And to be very clear, this was an important step, but it was just one step. And the truth is that the servicing of these mortgages, as egregious as these practices were, didn't cause the crisis in the first place. They made it worse. They deepened the damage. But it was really the creation, what we call the origination of these mortgages, the securitization of them, the slicing and dicing of them into all these pieces, right, that really caused the meltdown and the crisis in the first place. And at the same time that we completed this settlement, the president announced, and we formed with the attorney general, with Eric Schneiderman, the attorney general of New York State, with Attorney General Holder, the U.S. attorney general, a aggressive working group focused on both criminal and civil violations by the institutions in creating these loans in the first place. And by the way, the servicing settlement didn't settle any criminal authority. We didn't give up any criminal authorities in this settlement in the first place. So if we find criminal acts around robo-signing, we can pursue those still as well.
And that's Sean Donovan, our guest today on Radio Times, sworn in as the 15th United States Secretary for Housing and Urban Development. He's got a long history working on affordable housing in the U.S., served as Commissioner of the New York City Department of Housing Preservation and Development. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. The Obama administration's the program, HARP, was criticized that only something like 750,000 people were able to refinance their mortgage through this particular program. I think the plan was for millions of people to be able to do that. What happened? What went wrong, do you think?
Well, let me make sure for those who don't speak HUD out there, they know what HARP is.
I can speak
it
for an hour.
Yes. You know, what we have right now, we have the lowest interest rates in the history of the 30-year mortgage in this country. And typically what you'd see from interest rates like these is a big lift to the economy, one that makes a real difference in moving the economy forward. We've seen some of that, but not as much as we could have because so many families are underwater. What we had when the president came into office was that underwater homeowners couldn't refinance at all. So we created this program called the Home Affordable Refinance Program, or HARP. And we did see, and let's remember, close to 1 million families refinancing is important. That's 1 million families who wouldn't have had that benefit otherwise. But what we found was the very problems that created the crisis in the first place, the conflicting incentives that all these different people who own these loans, the second liens, all of the complexity of our program of our housing market that really caused the crisis in the first place made it much harder to clean up. And so last year, the president, in front of Congress, assigned us, his economic team, and the private sector and said, look, go back to the drawing board, fix all of these barriers that are stopping families from refinancing. And if you remember, he started a We Can't Wait campaign, and the very first action of his We Can't Wait campaign was this refinancing effort. So we did that over 6 weeks. We got all of our best minds in a room. One by one, we knocked down these barriers. And at the beginning of this year, we announced HARP 2.0, a revised program for refinancing. And it's had remarkable impact. What we've seen in just the first few months of this year is a huge increase in refinancing around the country, particularly in the hardest hit states. In Pennsylvania, if you look just at March, the number of refinancings doubled compared to a year ago. If you go to states like Nevada, Arizona, you're talking about a quadrupling or a tripling of refinancing. About 750,000 families have already filed applications for this new effort in just the last few months. So it really is making a difference, so much so that the president said, look, this is only available to homeowners that only had government-backed mortgages, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, FHA. On June 11th, what goes into effect is a dramatic cut in the fees for refinancing for underwater borrowers with FHA. But you have about 3.5 million families that, because they have what are called private label securities loans or loans that are in the portfolios of the banks, aren't able to refinance. And what's crazy about this, a homeowner doesn't know whether they have a Fannie or Freddie. It's just simply unfair that families who are doing the right thing, paying their mortgages every month, but because they're underwater, they could save $2,500 to $3,000 a year every year they're paying their mortgage. It's like a major tax cut for them, but they're not able to access it just because they have a different type of mortgage. So the president tomorrow is going to be in Reno, Nevada, pushing Congress to pass a refinancing program that he laid out in the State of the Union to make every family who's current on their mortgage but underwater eligible to refinance.
Well, let me get some callers in on the conversation. Looks like we have Jacqueline from Yaden joining us on Radio Times. And Jacqueline, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi there.
Thank you.
You're
and
welcome.
Hello, Secretary Donovan. My call has to do with mobility for people who are using housing vouchers, who are trapped in lower-income communities, who are contributing to the concentration of poverty in those communities, and who do not have access to jobs because of where they are, and their children do not have access to quality education. I want to know how aggressive your administration is going to be or is on that issue.
Jacqueline, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Go ahead.
It's a great question, Jacqueline, and there are really two parts to what the president is doing on this. First of all, real choice means that every community that's struggling, it's a community that doesn't have access to good schools, to health care, to jobs, has the chance to really build itself up. And so we have a neighborhood revitalization initiative with about a dozen different agencies around the country, federal agencies working on this. But at the same time, you're absolutely right. We also have to make sure that families have choices in where they live, and particularly what you see for families with disabilities, that they can become trapped in housing and not have mobility. Vouchers can be a key part of our strategy on this, and one of the things that we've been working on for the last few years is a demonstration that it's called Money Follows the Person. We've worked with the Department of Health and Human Services. Kathleen Sebelius has been a great partner on this, to connect the resources that are available for supporting families, whether it's through Medicaid or otherwise, that can follow the person, that you can use a voucher and you don't have to be tied to a particular location to get those services, particularly if it's in a community that doesn't have those opportunities, doesn't have decent schools. And so we're trying to increase the opportunities for mobility for those families. Another key part of this here is to better connect transportation to those housing opportunities, so that you have a community that's currently cut off, whether it's an urban community or a suburban community, from being able to access those services. We're working very closely with the Department of Transportation to bring all forms of transportation to neighborhoods that have been cut off before.
Jacqueline, thanks for calling into Radio Time. Just a quick follow-up here, but if we're talking about a voucher, assuming we're talking largely about Section 8 housing, the idea that a voucher can get you into a different neighborhood, are there, let's say, middle-class neighborhoods that are open to this idea, the idea of residents with vouchers?
There are. We do see resistance from some communities. And certainly what we're trying to do is to make sure that when we're building affordable housing, that we do it in a way it's mixed income. There really are new models that are very different from the old models of public housing that we had, and we've been meeting with real success. On the voucher side, this is a particularly important way that a family can get access. They rent any unit that's available in the housing market at a price that the voucher will allow. There are limits to that, and that really gives them a broad set of choices that's important. And where we do see resistance, where it really is based on discrimination or others, we enforce the fair housing law at HUD, and we've been aggressive about making sure that every community is doing its part in terms of making access to housing available.
I know there are long waiting lists or lines for these programs. How can that be speeded up?
Well, first of all, we have a pretty fundamental choice that's ahead of us in terms of how we're going to balance our budget in this country. And the president has said over and over that we have to be fiscally responsible. And he's had to make some very tough decisions. I've had to make some very tough decisions in HUD's budget in other times that we wouldn't have made. But the fact is we have to ask everybody to share in whatever sacrifice we're asking for. We can't balance this budget on the backs of the most vulnerable in our country. And that's why the president has taken a balanced approach that says everybody ought to pay their fair share, particularly those who are doing the best and have actually seen their taxes reduced over time rather than paying their fair share. So that's one thing that we need to do. The other is we have to make these programs operate better. One of the things we've been able to do, because we've taken an approach that is much more efficient and effective, we've been able to actually increase the number of families that are served by vouchers or public housing by over 100,000 families over the last few years without a single more dollar from Congress. We have legislation that we're trying to get through now that would help even further to do that. Removing red tape, improving the programs, those are all things that we can do to serve more people with the same amount of money or even with reduced money.
We're almost up on a break here, but I was reading a piece in ProPublica that was actually critical of some of the banks that own housing in some of these poor minority neighborhoods. The idea that they own the house, but they're not keeping it up. And of course, we know what happens in a block if there's one house that's in disrepair.
Well,
we have about 30 seconds. Go ahead.
What happens is if a foreclosure sign goes up next to your house, even if you're paying your mortgage, you're doing everything you should be, keeping up your end of the bargain, your own home goes down in value $5,000 to $10,000 as soon as that sign goes up next door. And so what we've really focused on, in addition to helping individual families, is what we call neighborhood stabilization. The idea is to go in, help to buy up and renovate these homes. We've put about 1,000 people back to work in the Philadelphia area renovating these homes. And what it does is help to reverse that spiral of price declines. And it's been particularly focused on the neighborhoods that are hardest hit, twice as targeted at minority neighborhoods and others because they were so hard hit.
Well, let's take that short break. We'll get back to our conversation and our callers and our guest today on Radio Time, Sean Donovan. And he is the U.S. Secretary for Housing and Urban Development. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Anishinaabe Theater Company supports WHYY and presents the Philadelphia premiere of Irish playwright Enda Walsh's The Walworth Farce, now through May 27th at the Off-Broad Street Theater, 1636 Sansom Street. Details on WHYY's Arts Calendar webpage.
Penn Medicine supports WHYY. Have you been feeling anxious, worried, on edge? The Integrative Medicine and Depression Research Unit at Penn Medicine is studying the causes and treatment of mood disorders. You may be eligible to participate in a research study looking at the effects of natural supplements to treat the symptoms of worry and anxiety. Initial evaluations determine eligibility for treatment. To learn more about Penn Medicine's Integrative Medicine and Depression Research Unit, 215-662-3462. 215-662-3462.
Woodmere Art Museum in Chestnut Hill supports WHYY and offers a variety of summer art classes and workshops for all ages and skill levels. Art making in a professional setting with classes for adults that include painting, drawing, collage, photography, and more. Children and teens ages 6 and up can enjoy printmaking, painting, animation, sculpture, bookmaking, and more. All classes are taught by renowned local artists. Studio open house May 19th from 1 to 4 p.m. 215-247-0948 or woodmereartmuseum.org.
Hey everybody, Jad here. Radiolab is coming to Philadelphia with a live show. We'll be joined on stage by Dimitri Martin, the musician Tao Nguyen, and the Palabolas Dance Theater. Come check us out at the Academy of Music on June 29th. Tickets are at radiolab.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane talking with HUD Secretary Sean Donovan. He's actually in Philadelphia going to be giving a keynote speech at the a national community development conference called Reinventing Older Communities, Building Resilient Cities. He joins us on Radio Times to talk about some of the challenges facing homeowners and the Obama administration dealing with the mortgage crisis and the fallout from the financial crisis as well. Let me get Robert from Warrington to join us on Radio Times. And Robert, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. Good morning, Mr. Secretary. Thank you for this opportunity. I commend you on your work, but I'm sickened by listening to all this. You know, I'm one of the tragedies. I lost my job 3 times in 10 years through no fault of my own. We paid off our mortgage last month. We just didn't want to look at that anymore. You know, there was no relief for anyone like us. And I remember, you know, 12 years ago buying the house, how much money they wanted to lend, and we kept pushing back from the table. We found $250 million in Pennsylvania to bail out some people, and the schools are suffering in so many other crucial programs. That's what I'm having so much difficulty listening to this, that, again, we're bailing out people who made some really poor mistakes on their own. I know they got thrown a loop by some of the banks and the lenders.
I hear you, Robert, and let me give Sean Donovan a chance to weigh in, feeling like, look, I did my part. I didn't get a bailout. Here you are helping these other people underwater.
You said one of the challenges you've had is losing a job. One of the things that I think the president has been very focused on is how do we make sure we get past this framing of this issue as, you know, this is just about a focus on people who made mistakes versus families who are doing the right thing. We have to make sure there is help available. And, you know, at the end of the day, what we've got is a fundamental difference. There's some people who say just let the housing market hit bottom. And the problem is that that's a little bit like saying, well, if your house is on fire, but it's because you were smoking in bed, we're not going to send the fire department, even though it could mean that everybody's house in the neighborhood catches on fire. Our view is that the families like you that are being hurt dramatically by this crisis are those who may have lost a job and through no fault of their own haven't been able to pay their mortgage. But it's not just that. If you live next door to a home, as I said earlier, where a foreclosure sign goes up, even if you're doing everything right, paying your mortgage, your own home loses $5,000 to $10,000 in value that very day. So what we're trying to do is make sure, first of all, there's help available to responsible homeowners. I said the president is going to be in Reno, Nevada tomorrow. We've expanded dramatically, about 750,000 families just in the last few months who've been able to refinance their mortgages that are underwater and current. They're doing everything right. They're paying their mortgages, and they, on average, benefit about $2,500 to $3,000 a year. But there's a group that can't refinance because they don't have a Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac or an FHA mortgage. The president is saying to Congress, this is a group that's been responsible, that's done the right thing. They ought to be able to refinance to what are record low interest rates today. So I hear you that we haven't reached everybody. Some of these programs have been difficult to make work. That's why we went back to the drawing board and are improving these programs. But at the end of the day, we have to remember, if we don't do something here, if we don't keep pushing, everybody's going to suffer, those who have been responsible and those who haven't.
And what I heard from Robert is those people that were irresponsible for whatever reason, that they get, in a sense, bailed out or even rewarded for their bad behavior.
Well, again, let's just take this refinancing the president's going to be talking about tomorrow. It's only for people who are current on their mortgages. And so we want to make sure that there is specifically help available to responsible families.
Let me get Larry from Warminster to join us on Radio Times. And Larry, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
Secretary Donovan seems to be doing a lot of wonderful things, but more needs to be done, obviously. I'm a home energy auditor, and I know that green homes appreciate in value by 5 to 15%. So I'd like to ask the Secretary, would a national policy on home energy efficiency help homeowners who are underwater and the many more of us like myself who are on the edge?
It's a good question, Larry. Thanks for calling in. Yes, go ahead.
Absolutely. And one of the things that the way things work in our country is that what we can do on the federal side is to encourage those kind of things, to support funding for them, and to, for example, make loans available that help to support energy efficiency. We're doing all those things. Local governments, state governments are responsible for setting the building codes and other things that might require those things. But on our side, what we're really trying to do is encourage that kind of investment. The Recovery Act, the stimulus bill, was the single largest investment that we've made as a country in energy efficiency retrofits. We've reached almost 1 million homes around the country to be able to retrofit them. And what we're trying to do now is make sure, because the savings, as you say, are so significant from these retrofits, they can actually be paid for. They can buy the savings that you achieve. So we've actually launched over the last year something we call Power Saver. It's an FHA-insured mortgage that allows you to capture up front the savings that you're going to get and pay for those renovations basically free to the homeowner. And that's the next wave of what we're doing, is to really make sure we move from supporting this through home energy investments to a capital system, a loan system that actually will make this self-supporting.
Larry, thanks for the call. Let's see what Brian from Glassboro has to say. And Brian, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thanks for taking my call,
Marty. You're welcome.
Mr. Secretary, I want to follow up on something you said about 15 minutes ago, and that is that you have adopted the narrative that the financial crisis was somehow caused by people who are underwater and poor people in this country, and that is simply not the case. There's tons of research that's been published, there are tons of articles, and there have been books written on what actually caused the financial crisis, and it was not poor people and people who are underwater in their mortgages.
Well, Brian, let me give
maybe you misunderstood what I said. What I said was, look, there were clearly people who made mistakes. There were people who took out loans that were too large. But what I clearly said was that wasn't the cause. I agree with you. We shouldn't adopt the narrative of somehow blaming the victim for this. Again, that's not to excuse all the behavior of homeowners. There were folks who took out more than they should. But I agree with you that this was a much broader, more fundamental failure, a regulatory failure, a failure of institutions. And frankly, it's one that we ought to make sure, as we're building a housing finance system going forward, that we're focused on what really causes. You know, some would say that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac caused this crisis, or that government policy that encouraged homeownership caused this. And we've done our own reports that show that that's clearly not true. What caused this was primarily a failure of regulation and a set of financial institutions that went too far.
But would you say those predatory practices that led to the financial crisis, are they gone? Are they essentially removed from the system?
I think we've seen improvement, but I would not say that they're gone. And that's why it's so important. You know, the president felt real urgency. He had asked Congress to approve his nominee for the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Remember, this is a president who fought to set up for the first time an agency whose sole job is protecting consumers. he had to make a recess appointment to allow that work to go forward. One of the things that was in this mortgage settlement that we talked about for the first time was clear, strong standards on how these mortgages are serviced going forward. But that only applies to the five banks that are part of it. The president has a homeowner bill of rights that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is now implementing through strong rules that will require every institution, when they service a mortgage, when they make a mortgage, to do it in a safe way.
And Fannie and Freddie have about half of the mortgages, yes?
That's right.
Okay, fair enough. Let me get, looks like Bobby from Mount Laurel to join us. And Bobby, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah. Hi there. It's a pleasure to be here. I work with people every day that are suffering from this practice right now. And the number one thing that I see that's the problem in the market today is the services. The servicers do whatever, whenever they want. You have people 3, 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, a year and a half. And it's nice that new laws come out. But if the government isn't going to force the bank and implement those laws, they're not worth the paper they're written on. What is going to be done? How can an advocate or a homeowner reach out to the government to get some assistance, because they are getting the runaround?
Okay, Bobby, go ahead, Sean.
And this is when we went back and investigated, this is exactly what we found. Families whose calls were dropped five times, were passed back and forth, whose paperwork was lost two or three times. And so I hear these stories, and I know our investigators found exactly this. What is critical about this settlement, and I just talked about the standards that are being put in place, and I agree, if they're not enforced, they're not worth the paper that they're written on. And so what we've done in the settlement is created a national monitor. Joe Smith, who was a very strong regulator before taking this, who now has real authority. Anytime he finds a violation of these standards, he, one, has the power to require that they fix every – there's a zero-tolerance policy, every single example. He can implement $1 million or $5 million fines for every example of a violation that he finds. And importantly as well, he's going to be working with state attorneys general around the country. Linda Kelly here in Pennsylvania has been very engaged on this, and she has about $65 million she's getting directly out of the settlement that can go towards efforts like outreach, counseling, and other things that can make sure when a family is taken advantage of, when they're not getting what they should get from the servicer, she can find out and work with Joe Smith, who's the monitor for the settlement, and make sure, one, that it gets the wrong gets righted, but also that there are real penalties in enforcement where there are examples like that.
Mitt Romney was heard, I think it was an off-mic comment that he made in Philadelphia, saying that if he became president, he would at least consider getting rid of HUD. I'm also looking at a sentence from Politico from earlier this year. The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development has been a backwater of corruption, cronyism, and ineptitude in the worst stretches of its history. We also know about Carl Green and the problems here in Philadelphia. Questions raised, I guess, about the reputation of HUD. Deserved, undeserved?
Well, Marty, there is no question that there have been periods in HUD's history when the agency was not run effectively, when there was corruption, and there are examples in local government. Certainly, what happened here in Philadelphia with Carl Green is an egregious example. I think the question is, what am I? What is this president doing to respond when we have examples like that? Where in local government, local housing authorities, we find that. And the answer is, take the Carl Green example. We moved very quickly, not just to remove him, but actually to get the entire board to step down. We brought a receiver in to take over that housing authority. And I think if you look broadly, don't take my word for it, there's been a lot of focus on this in the local press, that the culture at the Philadelphia Housing Authority, the way that it's running its programs has improved substantially over the time that we have taken over that housing authority. The same is true in examples like in New Orleans or others where we had real corruption and problems there. So this is really a question about how we are responding where we find those, and really creating a culture of zero tolerance for that kind of behavior.
Let me squeeze one more caller in. We've got, it looks like Christine from Delaware joining us on Radio Times. Christine, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you so much for talking about this. You've actually answered my question while I was on hold about somebody who bought within their means, trying to refinance, house is less value, and we're not qualifying. But the one thing that I just don't understand is why don't the banks want to work with the homeowners instead of having a vacant house? Like, I don't understand. Like, wouldn't they rather just lower the interest rate and have us who are still current keep paying versus lose all the payments and have a vacant house? I just don't get that missing link.
Well, that's a great question. Well,
you,
go ahead,
you know what? I didn't get that either, and the president didn't get that either, because, frankly, what we have here is a situation where if we can help a family stay in the home, you not only help that family, you help their neighbors, and increasingly what the evidence shows is that you help whoever owns that loan, because they're much more likely to be able to recover if that family can be successful. Unfortunately, what we found is that many servicers were just completely overwhelmed. They hadn't built the systems or the infrastructure to be able to respond. They've been cutting corners and doing other things. And in some cases, we found behavior that went beyond that, that was illegal. And so what's important here is that we continue to push the servicers to hold them accountable to be able to respond. I talked earlier about the settlement and what we put in place. But the other thing we have to do is make sure that there is help available. And the key thing, you mentioned specifically a focus on underwater homeowners. I bet you or the person you're talking about doesn't even know whether they have a Fannie Mae or a Freddie Mac or an FHA mortgage. And yet, if they do, they can refinance today because they're underwater and they've been paying their bills. They can save $2,500 to $3,000 a year. But if they have a different kind of mortgage, they can't. That's why what I would urge you and everyone who's listening today to reach out to your members of Congress to tell them to pass this bill, these bills that the president has in front of Congress that would help every responsible family to refinance and to be able to benefit from what are the lowest interest rates we've ever had on a 30-year mortgage.
And we have almost no time here, but do you see, as you look into the future, when you think this housing situation is going to right itself?
Well, I did say earlier, we've seen the housing market turn a corner this winter, the best winter of home sales since the crisis began. And just here in the Philadelphia region, CoreLogic's numbers for March showed the first year-over-year increase in housing prices in some time. So that, I think, is an important turning point. What we can't do, just like in the job situation, we can't rest on our laurels. We have to do more. The president and I are going to keep pushing, and particularly keep pushing Congress to pass these refinancing bills that he'll be talking about in Reno, Nevada tomorrow.
Sean Donovan, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Great to be with you, Mark.
Nice to have you with us. He is the Secretary of the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. I'm Marty Moscoane. Stay with us. We've got hour two waiting in the wings. We'll be right back.